many years ago when I was a student. So they spoke about at the yeshiva, Yeshiva University, the food is always kosher. How do you know? Because the food always has a nice empowerment of God. It always tastes awful.
Well,
the food always tastes awful.
A tom of what?
Nice and tom of God. What we have over here, the quotation.
Tasted awful. That was
right. Right.
And because JTS's might have been better, there was a question of kosher.
Right, right. JTS actually had a very good kitchen at those days.
Bad. Bad at school?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's
a very, very complicated statement. That's
yes,
very
it
very
is.
Confusing.
All right. But nevertheless, it is one of the principles that has to be taken into consideration sometimes. Okay? All right. Ella the Didach says, Shibuel, to Rav, and let's get back to your argument, the Amrit that you said, Daniel Gozer Alof, right, that Daniel was the one who made a Gezerah, in other words, he made a decree not to use the Shemen of idolaters. Daniel Gozer, so you mean to tell me that Daniel makes a decree, they also Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, and along comes Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, right? And what does he do? He negates it, right? He annuls it. You understand? The Otnan, and haven't we learned in God knows how many places that ain't Bezdin Yochel Levatel, Divrei Bezdin Chaveiro, that one Bezdin cannot put aside, cannot nullify the decision
of another
Bezdin, Ela Imkain, unless it is Godo Haymenu Bechachma Veminyan. It is greater than the other Bezdin in wisdom and also in the number of rabbis who agree with that particular opinion, right? So, how can we say that, after all, Daniel is a biblical figure, the head of the Jewish community in his time in Babylonia, and he is to the decree, and along comes Yehuda Hadassi, and he has the temerity to annul it? How could he do it? So, Omalei Simlai, of course, who were they quoting? They were quoting Simlai, right? Rabbi Simlai and the Tzivin, if you remember, right?
Yeah, right.
So, Rav says, Simlai.
Not Rav.
Omalei Simlai? Ludor Ka'am, right? It says, you know, this Simlai, he says, he comes from Lod, okay? Originally, you know where Lod is, where the airport is today, okay? So he says, all right, so he comes from Lod, and you know what he says about the people of Lod? He says, Shani Ludai de Mizalzale, you know what? People in Lod have a reputation that they don't take the mitzvahs seriously. So in other words, Rav is insulting the quotation in the name of Simlai. Okay?
So where do we stand in this?
Where do we stand? I'm not finished yet. Not finished yet. Matter of fact, it continues even for some time over here, where the argument's going back and forth and occasionally throwing in something else and so on and so forth. Okay? The truth of the matter is, if you want to know what the decision is to permit it. Even as, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Nahanossi in his Bezdin said that it is permitted, right? It's a brutal. Why? So let's find out one reason why, all right? So at any rate, in this argument between Rav and Shmuel, right? So Rav suggests that Rabbi Simlai is not to be relied upon, right? You don't accept his hechsher, so to speak. Okay.
Spoil. Yeah. What is Bizal Zeal? Is that to spoil?
Yeah, to hold cheaply, literally.
It's denigrate,
right.
Comes from
right.
Is that what it is?
That's what he's saying, right.
Okay,
somehow or other, I don't know. In the back of my mind, the word ludus and Latin is a game. In other words, he's more interested in games than he is in... but this is only my guess. Okay. The Torah, the sages take it literally, though. They call it some blood, and they don't observe the Torah as carefully as Rav would like them to do. All right. So anyway, what does Shmuel say to him? Says, Amalei. So Shmuel says to him, Eshlach Lei. Okay, shall I tell him what you have to say about him? Yichsiv. So, in this particular case, Rav became embarrassed. Omar Rav. So Rav says, well, look. Imheim ledorshu anan lo darshina. If they don't interpret the pasuk upon which I based my opinion, then I will not do so. Well, maybe it's a question. Maybe shouldn't I do it? The hawk sif, I would take it real as a question. You know, there's no punctuation over here. So that's why sometimes you don't know, is this a declarative statement or is this an interrogative? Mm-hmm. My own opinion over here is that it's more like, just because they didn't doesn't mean that I shouldn't. Understand? Hawk sif, after all, what does the pasuk in the book of Daniel say? It says, "Vayosem Daniel alibo." Daniel literally put in his heart. In other words, he made a decision, right? Asher lo yisgoil b'fatz bag hamelch, that he would not profane himself by eating the king's bread, pasbag, or the king's food. It's the pas we know is bread, but pasbag hamelech means the royal food that was being offered to him, right? Uviyayin mishtav, nor in the wine which he was drinking. But because it says mishtav, so Rav points out that's a plural form. You understand? Yud vav is attacked onto a plural noun, not to a singular noun. If it were a singular noun, it would be mishtov. Okay? But it isn't. It's mishtav, which indicates two types of liquids. Okay? That's what he says. Mishtei mishtoras. Two types of liquids. Akos medaber, right? The text is talking about. Echad mishtei yayin. One of the things that he said, I'm not going to drink wine, right? The echad mishtei shemen. Nor am I going to drink the oil. Okay. So, what are you going to do? So, the Gemara says, Rav sover alibo, so Rav was of the opinion that not only did Daniel make this decision for himself, right? Will all Yisrael Torah, and he taught the people of Israel that this was the correct decision, so that therefore Shemen should be prohibited, in the opinion of Rav. Okay? Understand the argument?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, but it's also in conjunction with the wine. It's the wine from the previous
one. All right. Wine is taken more seriously. We'll see in a second. Okay? Ushmuel so far, but Shmuel was of the opinion, the bow some, right? He made this decision for himself, but what? Well, the whole Yisrael, no hurrah. But he did not impose this decision upon everyone else. Okay?
Talking about Rav and Shmuel.
Right, the two contemporaries, who studied in Eretz Yisrael and then went to found yeshivas of their own in Babylon. Okay. So, just to sum up at this particular point, if the decision was only for himself that he undertook, but not for all Israel, then what? And therefore, we could find some justification for the Beis Din wrote for Rabbi Yehuda Anossi and his Beis Din for saying, look, people didn't accept it. It was only Daniel's decision. Understand? So therefore, this would be an argument against Rav, who said that the reason was because of Daniel's decree. Okay? This is what we're trying to determine. Right.
Interpreting it that it was only for itself and not for all.
Right. This is according to Shmuel, not Rav. Yeah, Rav is right. But this is Shmuel's opinion. And now they ask, wait a minute, you say Shmuel? I mean, you say Daniel? This is what the next question is. Hashem and Daniel Gozar. And you tell me that it was Daniel who made the decree against the use of olive oil of goyim, right? Do'amar bali avimi noso, din bali avimi noso, mishmeda Rav, say in the name of Rav. Remember, it's the same Rav, right? What did he say? He said, Piton, v'shamnon, yenon, v'nosehen, kulon mishmenosa dovorhe. Prohibition of the bread, right, that's pit, pasim, no, pasim, piton, of oil, right,
yeah,
wine, and shiksas, okay, their daughters, okay?
Wow.
All of them were included in the 18 decisions made, and this is a reference to the Gemara that we have in the first chapter of Gemara Shabbos, where it says over there that they came to that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, of course not Shammai and Hillel, but their disciples, okay? They came to visit a great sick scholar, you know, and while they were there in the attic, it so happened that there were more of the disciples of Shammai than the disciples of Hillel present. So they made several different decisions. They made 18 different decisions, and these were among them. Now, if that's the case, what they're saying is, in the name of Rav, here you, Rav, you're telling me what? That it was Daniel who did it, right? And all of a sudden, they're quoting Rav to say that, no, this is one of the 18 decrees that were made by the sages, and obviously this is much later in the time of Daniel, you understand? Because this is already at the time of the, the last days of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, the second temple days, Beis HaMikdash, and Daniel was, you know, the interim period between the destruction of the first temple and the beginning of the second one. So it's a range of 500 years, perfect, okay? So now he's saying, no, it was a decree that was made 500 years later. This is what he's saying at this point, right? It's being quoted as saying, all right? Okay. V'chi teimor, and if your argument is, also Daniel goes up below Kibel, that Daniel Taka made a decree against it, but nobody accepted it. Okay? He also told me to do it over the Shammai, the gods of the Kibel. And along came the disciples of Hillel and Shammai, and they made a decree, and then the Mishnah accepted it as being official, right?
So they didn't accept Shammai, but when Daniel, but when Shammai and Hillel came along, they accepted it.
Right, right.
They didn't accept his Tashkofa then,
right.
Daniel's Tashkofa.
Right. So, now the Gemara wants to know, so in Cain, if that's the case, my Yisraelu say the Rav, so what does Rav taking as his witness, as his argument, right? The testimony that it was Daniel who did it. Elo Daniel Gozar Olov, so they have a different interpretation of the comment. Elo Daniel Gozar Olov the year, Daniel's prohibition was for the people who were living in the city. And we already had a similar idea last week, if you remember,
when
we pointed out, right, that their intermarriage was, right. And therefore, again, we have to come to a conclusion that basically the reason for the pass, the Sherman, and the Leyin, and so on, is because they want to discourage intermarriage with the daughters of the Ovdei Kochav. You understand?
Right.
So he did it in the city, right? The Yosu Inhu, and they came along. The Bezdin of the Hillel and Shammai, right? They came along, the Gozer Apila Boseda, and they came along and they made a decree to apply even in the field where, you know, the incidence of the intermarriage, the occasions for intermarriage were not that great, okay? So, but they still want to know the Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, and Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, I mean, according with Rav's opinion, even though, you know, now he's talking about whether it's in the city or the field and so on, but Rav still says it's prohibited, right? Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, Heichi Musi L'Mishra Takavtin Tamini Shamin Hillel. So again, the question is, and how could Rabbi Yehuda Anosi dare to, you know, literally to permit, but of course what we mean is, you know, to permit a decree that had been made by Hillel the Shabbai not to permit it, right? There are Tadan, after all, didn't we learn the principle that Ein Bezdin Yochel Avato Divrei Bezdin Chaveiro, right? That one court cannot nullify the decision of another court. Elim Kein Godel Heimene B'chokhem Minyon, unless it is greater than it, either in wisdom or in numbers. Theod, and in addition, didn't Rabbi Balchona say, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and then Rabbi Yochanan, that Bakol Yochol the Batil Besin Divrei Besin Chadero Chutz Mishano Sedova, says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, a Besin can come along and nullify a decree of a previous Besin. Now, should have had good reasons for it. I mean, don't do it arbitrarily, you know. But under certain circumstances, it may be permissible to do it, but not in the case of what? The 18 things, the Shmoneh Sedavar, right? Which included Yayin, Shemen, Pas, right? Sha'afila Yovel Eliyahu, even if Eliyahu Anovi would come along with his Besdin, right? Ein Shemen Lo. You do not listen to him. In other words, you have to obey the earlier decree and not listen to Eliyahu Hanavi in his best, and if he decides that he wants to nullify that. So, we see how the argument is going back and forth, back and forth. So, Amar Rav Bisharshia, so Rav Bisharshia said, Ma Tam. So, what reason then? What reason then did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in his court give in order to permit the use of the shemen, the use of the oil, right? So he says, Oh, we'll approach the Surah, the role of Israel. The other things, namely yayin, right, not to use wine, bread, except, of course, we had a big discussion about that last week, you know, the difference between Pas Yisrael, Pas Palter, remember? And, okay, but the point is, you know, that these things, he says, the Shmoneh Esrei Dovah, those things, they were accepted by the multitude of the people of Israel. But Shemen, as far as the olive oil is concerned, Lo poshat isuro berov Yisrael. There, the prohibition never spread throughout the majority of the people of Israel. In other words, people of Israel did not accept this prohibition on the olive oil. Right? Do Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Abba, as Rabbi Shmuel bar Abba said, Omer Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan, Yoshvu Rabbi Seinu v'ubotku. Our teachers, right, they sat down and they examined Al Sheben Shalom Poshat Isruh Barov Yisrael. And they determined that what? That as far as the olive oil is concerned, its prohibition had not spread to the masses of the people of Israel, right? So the Sabcha Rabbo Seinu, therefore, our teachers, in this case, of course, meaning the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda Anossi and his court, they relied upon Al Divrei Rab Shimon Ben Gamliel, upon the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Yal Divrei Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok, the words of Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok, Shehoyu Omrim, who said, Ein Gozrin Gezerah Al HaTzibur, Ela Im Kein Rov HaTzibur, Yekolim La'amod Bo, that you did not force a decree upon people unless you know that the people will be able to live up to this decree.
That's a very, very important statement.
Very important statement.
Very important
right.
statement.
Right.
It seems
yes.
contradictory to our tradition that because the public or the Amcha didn't accept it,
right.
then the rabbis went along with it. It seems like the rabbinic law sat in the people.
Well, not in every area. Most of the areas they accepted, but here and there were exceptions. That's what we're saying.
But wasn't the fact that they didn't accept it based upon an earlier understanding that it was okay? So they got used to doing
right.
what was okay because
right.
it didn't refer to them.
Yeah.
And it would be like reversing themselves,
yeah.
putting in a new law.
Okay. If we
is
wish.
That something like what?
Right. Okay, if you wish, look. Let's examine the other cases. Those that we study. Wine, we know that it was used as a libation for our Beit Zohar, and therefore we ought to be very strict
yeah.
with wine. Okay? Alright. Then, let's say we take milk. Alright. The fear that we had with milk is that it would be mixed with trefa milk, if you remember. This was the right. This was at the this was at the heart of the prohibition. Of course, the fact that why do we permit it today? Because we know they're not going to mix trefa milk together with kosher milk, okay? As far as the bread is concerned, the pas, right? Again, there were those who felt, you know, that they might smear with lard or something like that, and so therefore, that was the reason for it. But if we know that lard was never used in it, you know, then in that particular case, we saw that while pas Yisrael should be used, but in an area where it wasn't readily available, then what? Then paspalta would be permitted, okay? So we can see, you know, the development in all those particular areas. But with shemen, in all due respect, I mean, what is treif about pure olive oil? You understand? There's nothing treif about it, and so therefore people continued to use it in spite of the fact that maybe Daniel felt, you know, that it should be prohibited, or in spite of the fact that, let's say, Rav felt that it should be prohibited, but the prohibition had not spread among the masses of the people, and so we come back to this decree, you know, don't make a decree if you know that they cannot live up to it.
I have a question, though. At one point in our history, there were two houses, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel.
Yes.
So we can infer for that not only did the Talmudim, at least half of the Talmudim or some significant portion,
right.
adopt this rule which prohibited oil along with 17 other prohibitions.
Yeah.
But a very large
they all did.
Of the population.
No, I mean, both the Talmudim, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai did accept it, but not the masses necessarily.
Yeah, that's hard for me to understand.
Yeah.
I mean, how could it be that the Talmudim accepted it, and that then the population didn't accept it?
Okay. The answer is, look, a person who is very, very medoctic, as we would say, right? Very exact in every item of the way he observes, you know, Yiddishkeit. He's going to be more machmir upon himself. Right? You understand that? In other words, he'll be much stricter upon himself than the average person will be. We know what is the ideal, but nevertheless, not every person lives up to the ideal. Okay?
But couldn't you say that, sort of like Beverly's question, couldn't you say that about every ruling, that it is sort of like a top-down effect?
Well,
Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai or both would set out what would be what we would call the rules and regulations, the principles that we live under, and that the people would follow because they were following everything else, how you would light Hanukkah candles, whatever. I mean,
correct.
Why this? Why this did they not
follow? Okay, but we're learning that nevertheless, in the case of olive oil, it's an exception. Okay.
I guess.
It's an exception.
This night has been full of mysteries.
No explanation.
I mean, we can follow this and see. I mean, as I said, we're not finished yet. But obviously, there were good reasons why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and his Besdin decided that since the prohibition had not spread among the masses of the people, then we should no longer continue, to keep a prohibition against it. I, Chaim, my uncle, want to keep the prohibition for themselves, Gesundheit, but not for the masses. Okay?
Couldn't it be, just vaguely, a thought that when Daniel suggested this, whatever,
correct.
Wrote, did he write it down someplace? Did people read it? Did they
know of his... Well, I'm sure he communicated.
The question of... I'm always... concerned. I mean, it always boggles my mind how the word got out about what it was that was expected of the people.
People speak, people teach. I mean, look, generation after generation, right? They learn from their predecessors. And writing has been around for a long, long time already. I mean, our alphabet is actually the basis. I'm not talking now about the way this, but, the older Hebrew alphabet, okay, is the basis of the alphabet that was adopted by the Greeks, by the Romans, and so on.
So what I'm asking is, would Daniel's prohibition about olive oil, for instance, have been known to the people?
Yes. He could have taught it to people. In Babylonia, even at the time of the exile, people would gather together in a shul to listen to leaders expound Torah and things like that, get together in order to daven. I mean, this is already in existence at that time. Synagogue may have been even older than that. May have been during the day of the first Beis HaMikdash, there were already synagogues in various areas as well. Okay, but certainly in Babylonia there were, because when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Jews still wanted to come together and practice Yiddishkeit. So how could they do it if they didn't get together and study together, have teachers who would teach them? You understand? So this is how it is. So Daniel, though, is pictured in the Gemara then as being a teacher to the people of his age.
When he was thrown in the lion's den, did this come up because he wouldn't eat the food, or that wasn't
part of it? No, there was a conspiracy against him on the part of people who resented that he had such an important position. And so they got the king to make a crazy decree saying, that at a certain time everybody has to bow down to an idol. And if not, then whoever that refuses to do it is going to be thrown into the lion's den. Since Daniel refused, so that's the reason why. Okay. Do one more line or so, and we'll call it a night, okay? All right.
We don't have the brains of these Talmidim Chachamim.
Right, Talmidim Chachamim, correct.
Right, did I say that right?
Right, Talmidim Chachamim. Talmidim Chachamim, right. As we say every Shabbos, Talmidim Chachamim, Ma'abim Shalom Reitim, right? That the sages, the disciples of the sages, they bring about peace in this world. Okay. So, All right. How do we know about the Sakri? He's looking for a pasuk in the Bible to justify it, okay? The Yomar Rav Ado Baravo, as Rav Ado Baravo said, like law, what is a pasuk? What is a verse in the Bible that brings out this view? So I'll read it and then we'll continue next week from this point. Bana'era atem ne'orim. The prophet Habakkuk, Malachi says to the people of Israel, says, you are being cursed with a curse, Yosiatem Kovim, and you try to cheat me. Hagoy Kulo, the entire people. And how does he interpret this to our business? He says, E, Iko Goy Kulo, In. If you have the entire nation, then the answer is yes. Meaning what? A decree that is accepted by the entire nation, such a decree, you know, is observed. Okay? Lo, but if not, lo, then don't force, you know, a decree upon people that they cannot keep. Okay? All right, so we shall stop at this particular point. Again, we are not, this is our last session tonight prior to the holidays. We'll resume again in November. Because next week is Rabbi Schachter's drasha over here, and the following week I have a big, I have a medical problem. Oh, that's going to keep me busy from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon. I think I will not be in a very good state. Something other than
that. Is the Schachter's Wednesday or Tuesday?
Wednesday. Next Wednesday night.
The
Eisenstein lecture. 21st.
I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't involved with it.
I read the announcements on Shabbos.
No, I mean, I read the announcements, but I wasn't involved in any aspect of it until today.
But the could you just go over this? The last sentence that you read?
Literally, it says you are cursed with because you're trying to cheat me, meaning the punishment that you have is because what? You know what is the law and what you should be doing, and you're not doing it, right? And he says, Hagoy Kulo, the entire nation is guilty of this. So the way he interprets it, you know, is what we call a drash. The drash is, if it is Hagoy Kulo, that observes, and in that case, that is a gezeira that you could accept. Okay? Well, if it's not, then in that case, you don't make such a gezeira.
Okay.
Well, good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Especially
the
What's happening?
Huh? They're trying to find out why I bleed internally. That's what it is. What are they going to do?
Go right on the tap? Goes right on the tap?
I'm not sure.
Have you had
when they do a philosophy or so on,
they
do a logic test, but they can't do a way to check out the swollen test. But I don't know why they did it.
She's telling me that she can't get bread now. Although the bread is kosher, dear, she can't get one with
I go to the Johnson and I see a doctor.
Did you change the
my eyesight. I'm very happy.
But it's unheard of.
Well, this is probably natural. I think it's very more sensible than that. But, very nice. Yeah, his daughter's so well, you know, all this. But, I mean,
make a living in New York, if you can't make a living here. Yeah. Yeah.
2nd of November, the year 2005, we are gathered once more to continue our class, the Gemara Avodah Zarah. We are currently on page 36b, or as we would say in Hebrew, Lamed Vav, Omed Beis. And just to sum up in two sentences what we've been studying in the past few months or so, primarily the prohibition that the rabbis instituted against wine, Yain Nesef, right? Against Pasakum, in other words, the bread of an idolater, the Shemen Shalakum, the oil of the olive oil, you know, of Akum, and tonight we'll discover that there's another thing that they prohibited. However, we also learned that as far as the oil is concerned, that people didn't observe it, and the rabbis decided to throw it out as a dead letter, okay? And we also learned that as far as bread is concerned, there are those who were in a place where it was impossible to have what we would call Pas Yisrael, in other words, Jewish bread or Jewish baked goods, and in that particular case we did permit what we called Pas Palter, if you remember. In other words, the baked stuff of a non-Jew, but you know, obviously that the ingredients would have to be kosher, okay? So this is what we learned as well. So now, tonight, we're going to discover, and what else did they issue a decree against, and we'll see. Okay, so here we go. Okay. We're on the beginning of the third line from the top.
Third line from the bottom?
From the top.
From the top?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Gufa. Gufa means, all right, let's get back to what we were talking about. Because they got a little bit sidetracked too. And of course, we certainly got sidetracked. So let's get back to the inyan, as we would say, you know, the matter that we're discussing. So they quote, Omar Bali. Bali was the name of one of the sages. And he said as follows, Omar Vimino Sor said, Mishmei the Rav, in the name of Rav. So now we know that this goes back to Rav, right? And what did he say? He said, Piton, Vishamnon, Yenon, Uvno Sehen, Kulon, Mishmon, Osa Dovahin. Okay. The prohibition against Piton. Piton is there. Pas, in other words, their bread, right? Mishamnon, their olive oil. Yenon, their wine. Uvno Sehen, here is the fourth item, okay? In other words, the daughters of the idolaters, the shiksas, okay? So he said, Kulon Mishmona Osir Dovarhein. These are things that we already learned earlier in the Mishnah. Not this Mishnah over here, but in the Mishnah in general, actually in Shabbos we find it, okay, that there were 18 decrees that were issued at one time. And these were among the decrees that the rabbis issued. This was shortly before the destruction of the temple, but they were afraid that, they had to enact certain things in order to make sure that Judaism would be preserved, even in the face, you know, of the impending destruction of Eretz Yisrael at the hands of the Romans, who, of course, were the epitome of the idolaters at that particular time. Okay.
So these four things were prohibited.
These four things were enacted. They were enacted as they should be prohibited. Right. Okay. So in other words, what he's saying is, it's not Rav actually who was already about the beginning of the third century. In other words, about the year 200 or so, who did it. But it goes back to the days of Hillel and Shammai, when their disciples were the ones who enacted these 18 prohibitions. So, in other words, that goes back at least 200 years prior. Right.
First century. Was Hillel and Shammai the first?
Hillel and Shammai lived actually in the first century prior to the Common Era. Right. Prior to the Common Era. But,
like
about, or at the very beginning, or the very beginning of the first century, right? But it was before 70, anyway.
Yeah.
Right, right, correct.
Oh, as late as that?
Second
no,
year.
It was
second
earlier year. Than that.
It was earlier than that. Yeah.
Because Hillel and Shammai actually go back yet, I would say at least two generations prior to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash.
The first destruction.
The second.
Right.
The second
right.
temple.
Right.
Okay.
But the disciples, naturally, they continued. And they
Rav
were the ones
was
who
about, about 300 in the Common Era? Somewhere around 300 in the Common Era.
Rav?
Yeah, approximately. Of course, he was definitely later, right? The first ones after the beginning of the second, about the year 200, he had Rabbi Yehuda Hadassi and some of the great students who had preceded him by one generation, such as let's say, for example, the Akiva and so on, all that, approximately, in that particular time. And Rav and Shmuel both came from Babylonia in order to study at the Academy of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. One point, they went back to Babylonia, and there they started yeshivas of their own. And that was the beginning, actually, of the Babylonian Talmud. Because, you know, they were the pioneers, so to speak, of the Babylonian academies, which continued for many hundreds of years afterwards. Some of them were destroyed, others came on the scene, and so on. But even as late as about the year 900 or something like that, there was still yeshivas in Babylonia that were functioning, that had been started, as I say, about the year 200 or so by Rav and Shmuel.
And this scholarship goes back to the first temple.
The Mishnah.
Did it continue? Did it continue from the Babylonian exile? The community continued and existed and studied.
Yes, but Babylonia wasn't that great. There were scholars over there, but the real impetus for scholarship in Babylonia came when Rav and Shmuel came in.
So
there were others before, but
when did they actually begin to redact the Talmud?
The Talmud? Well, the Mishnah was redacted approximately in the year 200, but then the Gemara, that was redacted about the year 500 in Babylonia. Neves Israel, the Yerushalmi, was redacted roughly about 450 or 400.
Came before the Babylon.
Yes. Of course, the Tzoras were greater. Christianity had started to persecute Judaism. Whereas in Babylonia, while at times they suffered at the hands of the Zoroastrians, but most of the time they lived fairly peaceably with them. Yeah. And there was a very strong government among the Jews in Babylonia. You had the Resh Galusa, in other words, the man who was the head of the Babylonian diaspora, and he was accorded honors by the king of Persia himself. I remember, they were under the rule of Persia at this particular time. So he had practically, like a court of his own and so on that he had. And he was a recognized authority by the Babylonian government. I don't want to say Babylonian, it's the Persian government, okay. Because Babylonia was conquered by Persia and became part of the Persian Empire. Okay, so now we come now, they say, that this antedated Rav, because this was already among the enactments, the 18 different enactments that the disciples of Hillel and Shammai had enacted prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And question is, okay, so since we already discussed wine, oil, bread, right, so now we want to find out why did they prohibit the daughters of the idolaters, okay, the shiksas. Why did they prohibit it, okay? So that's the question. Line 5, over there, but they'll say Hennai. So, what's the story about the non-Jewish women? So Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchok, he said, Goswell, but they say him Nidos Be'arisa's son. Alright, he says that the decree that they had made was to consider the Jew, the non-Jewish daughters as being already in the state of Nida, okay, from the moment that they were in their own cradle. In other words, from infancy on, they were considered that. Of course, the answer being why? Is a Jew permitted to have intercourse with a person, with a woman who is a Nida? The answer is no. So, in other words, what is the purpose to prohibit a Jewish man from having any intercourse with a non-Jewish woman? So that was a gezeira according to Rav Nachman. Okay. Geneva, Mishmeda Rav, Geneva gave a slightly different interpretation, the name of Rav. He said, Omar, Kulon Mishima Bizkochovim Gosru Behem. Everything that we're talking about over here, wine, oil, bread, and non-Jewish women, they're all in order to prevent Jews from becoming involved in idolatry. That was the purpose. Okay? Then they continue. Techiyosu Rav Acha Barada, when Rav Acha Barada came from Eretz Israel to Babylonia, Amar Rav Yitzchak, so he quoted Rav Yitzchak as saying, Gozru al Pita Nishuk Shamna. The reason why they prohibited the bread of an idolater is because of the olive oil that they use. So the Kavavar says, my rule made the Shemin the pot, so tell me, in what way is oil so much stronger than bread? In other words, that you have to issue, you say that you prohibit bread because of oil. So tell me, And how is oil any more important, shall we say, than the bread? Obviously not. So Elo, so he says, no, we have to say Alpita Neshamnon Meshum Yenon. The reason why they prohibited bread and oil is because of what? Because of wine. You understand? It's wine that they wanted to make sure that you wouldn't have, but the stepping stones, so if they also did that. But
well,
the wine.
Mean, for example, if you want to sit down and break bread with someone, you might take a little drink to wash it down.
Something like
it's
that.
Like,
right.
It has
right.
to do with the social life.
Right. Correct. It's absolutely right. Yeah. The social life.
The bread
and the wine. And of course, the fear that the wine, first of all, is wine that is, it may have been used as a libation to, you know, an idol, right? And then, and he says, we are Yenon, and you know why they prohibited the wine of the Goyim? Mishum and Isaiah, because of the non-Jewish women, right? Because they figure the person who started to drink wine, the next thing will be that he'll marry a shiksa. Okay? The Yavadah saying, and why did they prohibit non-Jewish women? The answer is Bishop Dovarachir. Okay? Because of something else, which means in this particular case, idolatry. Dovarachir, sometimes it means trade for food. I don't know. I don't know if you ever heard it in Yiddish, they use the expression Adovaracha, meaning either a pig.
What's that?
A pig.
Oh,
a chaza.
A
chaza. So Adovaracha.
Adovaracha.
Or, right, or a human being who, behaves sort of like a pig.
Yeah.
Right.
It's Adovaracha.
Right. Yeah, that I sort of see something else.
Right.
Right.
But here it means because of idolatry.
It actually means another thing.
Right, yeah. Right. They don't mention it by name, but
yeah,
it's understood,
yeah,
right. And the Al-Dover Acher, and why did they prohibit this? It says, Bishum Dover Acher. There's an additional, further reason why the prohibition exists. But as Rashi says, I'll tell you about it later on when we get to it. Okay. All right. But so far, we see what the chain is, right? That we prohibit those things which would lead to conviviality, eating bread, using their oil, drinking their wine, because we want to make sure that we don't get involved with non-Jewish women, who in turn will influence us to turn to idolatry. Okay. So now they question this because they say it only happened at this particular point. Maybe there is an antecedent precedent for this that we find in the Torah. That's what they're saying. But they're saying, Doraisahi. What do you mean? The prohibition against having to do with non-Jewish women, that's already in the Torah. Dichsiv, the pasuk says, Lo tizchatein bom. You must not intermarry with them. The Oraisa, according to the laws of the Torah, against whom was this prohibition? It was Zion Umos, right? In other words, the seven Canaanite peoples, okay? Seven Canaanite nations that are not allowed to intermarry, with their daughters. But the Torah did not prohibit intermarriage with any other types of idolaters, right? They also inhu, but then they came along, meaning, the rabbis. The Gozer Afil the Shor of the Kofamim, and they prohibited the rest of the non-Jewish women as well. Well, the Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and as far as Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is concerned, in his interpretation of that particular passage, the Omar, he said, it's written, Ki Yosir es Bincho Meyacharai. Torah says, because he will influence your son to turn aside from me. This is what it says, literally. Okay? So naturally, the rabbis call on the surahs. This includes any type of person who is going to turn your heart aside from the worship of God and turn to idolatry. And notice over here it's written in the feminine, okay, feminine plural. So that therefore we see that even though the Pasuk says, Ki Yosir es Bidcho Me'acharai, right, that he will turn your son from me, right, but it's understood that this applies equally well, that she will turn your son from me. It's understood. Okay. So he says, "My Iker Lameima." So tell me, what are you trying to tell me? He says, "Elador Raisa." According to the Torah, issues there are chasodis. What the Torah prohibited was to marry a non-Jewish woman, right? They also inhu, and then the sages came along and go to Rafila Delsnus, and they made a decree that you're not allowed to have any intercourse with any shiksa, whether she's married or not. Okay? Even Delsnus, which means even, you know, through whoredom, literally. So they say, Snus, whoredom, Namei Bebeis Dinushal Shem goes. That goes back even earlier than the rabbis, and even earlier to, let's say, before the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. How do we know that? Well, we know that for the following answer that we read in the book of Bereshit. By tradition,
right.
There's a tradition that, where did Yaakov Avinu study Torah? He studied in the yeshiva of Shem, or Shem Va'eva, okay? So, in other words, by tradition, there was already a yeshiva in existence even in the days of the patriarchs, you understand? Even in the days of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because if Yaakov studied over there, so obviously, it had been in existence for a long time. And we find out that they also had rules and regulations prohibiting whoredom with a non-Jewish woman. How do we know? Because it's written, we know that the Bezdin of Shem, they also made a decree against this. The service, the Pasuk says, "Vayomer Yehuda, hotzi Yehuda, v'sisoreif." If you remember the story about Yehuda and his daughter-in-law Tamar, okay? Tamar, she was married to Yehuda's oldest son, no child. So, therefore, what should have happened? His brother, right, so she marries the brother and he doesn't want any part of it, okay? And she sees that there's no hope for her. She's going to remain a widow. Because she sees
child.
That Yehuda, right?
There was a younger child that he didn't want.
Yeah, right, yeah. Correct, right. Yes, Shelah, but he was only a young kid,
right.
Exactly. And so, she took medicine to her hand, and she disguised herself as a Zayda, right? Kadesha is the word that they use in the Torah, which means a woman who prostituted herself as, for the sake of idol worship. You understand? For the sake of idol worship, because the Canaanites practiced that they had sacred prostitution, okay? had prostitution in the temple. That was good for the it was good for the idol. Okay. Of course, they collected a fee for that as well. Okay. All right. So, she disguised herself that, right? And then she became pregnant through Yehuda. And Yehuda, not remembering the incident, you know, when he found out that she was pregnant, so he said, have her burnt. In other words, put to death for that. But of course, I mean, she was not put to death of anything. Then she was recognized as the mother of the Peretz and Zorach, right? Peretz and Zorach, who in turn became, you know, forefathers of some of Yehuda's clans.
Was not Peretz? Yes,
absolutely. Of course. That's why Cordelia say Yad Ish Ben Parsi. In other words, David, who is the son of Peretz, right? The descendant of Peretz. So, all right. So the point that Rav Shimon Lakish is making over here is the fact that this is very old already, a prohibition against, you know, not just, let's say, cohabiting with a married shiksa, but even, you know, with an unmarried one. Okay. So it says Elador Raisa. Okay. The law of the Torah is that Oyved Kachovim Haba Bas Yisrael, if a goy has intercourse with a Jewish woman, the Moshka Basre, that what's going to happen, she's going to be attracted to his lifestyle. In other words, if he's an idolater, then she's going to be attracted to idolatry. Avoid Yisrael, Habal, Avedas, Kechovim, Loi. But if a Jewish man, has intercourse with a woman, idolatrous, he would not be attracted to it. That's according to the law. But the Yosu Inhu, then the sages came along, and Gozer, and they made a Gezer, they made a decree, Afilo Yisrael, Habal, Avedas, Kechovim, right, to prohibit even a Jewish man having anything to do, having to have any intercourse with an idolatrous. Okay, so now they say, okay, God's fine, you say the rabbis did it, but again I'll show you that it antedates that. How does it antedate that? He says Yisrael Habal Avedis Kechovim. If a man, a Jewish man, has intercourse with an idolatrous, right? Then Halachal Moshe B'Sinai. This is an oral tradition that dating back to Mount Sinai that this is prohibited. That it is prohibited. The Omar Mar, as one of the authorities said, famous statement over here, Gevorah in Sanhedrin, will be fine. Namely, Haboya Laramis, if a man has intercourse with an Aramean woman, in other words, with a Shiksa, right? Kanoim Pogimbo, then zealots are permitted to slay him. Of course, the case that, in what connection do we find that? The story of what?
Zimri
ben Salo, right? And Cosby Basur, correct. Exactly. So they say, well, wait a minute, that also needs a little bit of qualification. Because I have to tell you, I mean, the Gemara inside of it goes into this in greater detail. Okay. Says, when is this rule applicable? Only if it is done in public where everybody can see what is going on. an act of defiance. I mean, sometimes today you read someone, the state of Oregon, that they legalized having exhibitions of sex
really?
In the school.
telling. What is this again?
Oregon is so liberal, right? Okay.
Oh,
led by the ACLU.
They had a film for sex education, which shows
not just sex education.
What is sex education?
No, no. This is actual sexual actions that they are. They say that they can do it. They can have new dancing, new lap dancing, your face, and so on. And so on.
Oh, that's
that is in schools. Yeah. They don't have this.
No, the college and the college too. Oh, I don't know. They're showing porn or something in college in California or something. No, they're actually putting on a show. And the college defends their right to do it. Right. So, if we talk about parhesia, in other words, in public, it certainly is in public. And this is the business over there that when Pinchas killed Zimri ben Solo and Cosby Basur, it was because they were doing it publicly as an act of defiance to show that they didn't care about what had happened, you know, that Jews were prohibited from having anything to do with the Moabite women after the Moabites wanted to destroy the people of Israel.
Question.
Yes.
How did they get around the story of Moses and his wife? Wasn't she a priest's daughter? Was that considered idolatry?
Yeah, but according to our tradition, he renounced this idolatry.
She did?
He did.
Who
so
did?
She.
Yisro.
Yisro.
That was after.
Right.
Yeah, the father.
That was after when they had children, when he came to visit.
Well, according to the Medrash, okay, remember, Moshe Rabbeinu flees from Egypt. Finally, he comes to Midian, and over there, he finds, you know, shepherds at the well over there, and then he sees these girls coming, Jethro's daughters, and he sees that the shepherds chase them away. So, of course, Moses sprang to their defense and he drew the water, etc., etc. Okay. The question that the Medrash asks is, why is it that these Midianite shepherds drove away the daughters of Yisro? After all, Yisro was their priest, right? So why did they do it? The answer is because he had come out against the idols. He had renounced idolatry. So he was not an idol worshiper at this point anymore. Okay? And she obviously too then. So whatever way that they had in those days, I mean, you could say also, I mean, prior to that, how about Joseph marrying, you know, Potiphar's daughter and so on? And her father was a priest of On. What the answer is, they had some sort of a conversion in those days too. We don't know the exact nature of what the conversion was, but obviously there was some sort of a conversion going on. All right. So, again, going back to the story of Pinchas, so that particular case, his action was done because they violated the standards for Fahesia in public. Okay, and you know exactly the way the Torah tells us, you know, what they did. They also into Grozer of Yubitsido. But the rabbis came and they said, even if you have intercourse in secret, in private, this is also prohibited. Not just public, but private. By the way, there are also those in the Talmud who say that in spite of the fact that Pinchas was an emergency and he acted in order to, in order to prevent others from doing exactly the same, but nevertheless, as a normal person, he had no right to kill them. Just that this was happened to be an emergency situation, that's it. Okay. So now they come back and they say, wait, see not. As far as private is concerned, Name Bezdinish Hashmanai goes me. Whoa. This was done even earlier than at the time of the Shmon Eser Dover, you know, the 18 things that the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai prohibited. This already goes back to the time of the Hashmonaim. The Piyosa Rav Dibi, when Rav Dibi came from Eretz Yisrael, reported back to Babylonia what he learned. He says, Amar Bezdin Shel Hashmonai Gozmin, was the Bezdin, and so on. And what was the Gezerah, what was the decree that they had made? It said, Yisrael Habal Avinizkei Chovim, that if a Jewish man has intercourse with a Goyish woman, then he is liable for punishment because of these four things. Mishum Nashko, before of Nashko. So now we have to find out what does Nashko stand for. So for that we have to take a look at Rashi. Okay? Nashko. You'll see Omar Kulon in the text. And you have to go back. It's roughly about 10 lines from the top. Nashko.
Right, 10 lines.
Talks about it, right. Way before it is Vic Cosby.
Yeah.
Okay, Nashko. Says, Gozu Alehen, Mishum, Nido, the Rabbanan. First of all, what did they say? They said that Goyish women are Nidos, right? So that's one of the decrees that they made. Okay. The Yachol Gav the Avedis Kehovet Ein Domim Metamam in Torah, and even though a non-Jewish woman, blood is not considered, you know, as rendering unclean according to the law of the Torah. Shaharehi kebehema. It's not like, because she's considered like a behemoth. Does the blood of an animal render a person tummy? The answer is no. At least under normal circumstances it wouldn't, okay? So they say, therefore, her blood too does not. Yeah. But nevertheless, they made this decree. Hachonim Gozru Aleh, right? The sages made this decree, saying that she is now a Nida, because, you know, as we said before, they wanted to discourage anything you have to do. Okay. And now, what is the Shin? Mishum Shivka. Mishum Ivanis Kachavim. Okay. Shivka is, we translate it sometimes as a maidservant. In reality, it's the female equivalent of a slave. Eved is the male slave, and Shivcha is the female slave. Of course, in more modern terminology, where we don't have slavery, you understand, then Shivcha could be, let's say, the dinst and the hoys, you know, the servant woman or something, whatever. But we're talking now about what the term originally meant, okay? Shifra was originally a female slave, and she's a non-Jew, then we want to make sure that the master is not going to have anything to do with her, even though, you know, slaves were very often considered as being hefker. You know what I mean?
They were okay.
Right. So
that would have been the Jewish slaves, would it not?
Right. So, the slave of a Jewish master who is a non-Jew. If she converted, that's a different story. but we're talking about where she's not even converted yet, okay? So in that particular case, there's also a prohibition that should make sure that he's not going to marry any such woman. Okay. To make sure that he's not going to marry her, as a person gets married. Okay, now, the Gimel, what does the Gimel stand for? The Gimel stands for idolatry. Avodas Gilulim. Okay, that's another way. It's equivalent to Avodas Kechavim. It's Avodas Gilulim. Okay. So, that's the other thing. And finally, Umishum Eishes Ish, right? And also, to make sure that they would not marry, or they wouldn't have intercourse with a married woman. But not talking about a Jewish woman, talking about a married non-Jewish woman. The Bula's Baal, Yesh Lehen of Nei Noach, because even the descendants of Noah already had a prohibition against having intercourse with somebody else's wife. Okay? Deceive, because we find in the Torah that, Avimelech, king of the Philistines, complains to Abraham, why did you try to deceive me? And so on, right? Because if it weren't for the fact that God had stopped me from doing it, the Hebrew last ball, it would mean that I would have had intercourse with a married woman. So the Israel or Ragul Bechach so if a Jew became accustomed to having relations with a non-Jewish woman, right? So in that particular case, he would marry or alright, the first point that we said is Nido, right? That the Goyish women are considered to be Nidos. No, he says, if it weren't for this decree, if a Jewish man, would say, okay, Shiksa is not a Nido, right? So, he get used to it, and he get used to also wanting even to have intercourse with a Jewish woman when she is a Mitzvah, okay? When she's a Nido. So that's one of the reasons for prohibition of that. Okay? The Yossi Lemins of Shivcha, and it also be inclined that he wants to marry a woman slave, right? The Ovar, and in that case, he would be violating the command which says, Meshum Leah Kodesh, that you're not allowed to have anything to do with a prostitute, right? And Shifa would be considered, an idolater, which is a shiksa, like being a prostitute. They also the minzabor, that is kechavim, and then he would marry a goya, the ovar, and he would violate, right? He would violate the commandment not to marry them, right? And the osin mival eshazir Yisrael, and in the final analysis, he would even sink so low as to have relations with a Jewish married woman. So all these things, therefore, were prohibited from way, way back in order to make sure that these things wouldn't happen. But of course, again, basically is, if you have nothing to do with the goya, then in that particular case, you won't be tempted either to go into the ways of idolatry. This is what. Then there was a slight variation, instead of Nashgaz, we have Nashgor. We had Nashgor, right, but Kiyosa Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Abamishum Nashgaz. So what is the difference between Nashgor and Nashgaz? The answer is that he took out the Eishes Ish because obviously there's going to be a prohibition against marrying, against having anything to do with a married woman, right? Jewish married woman. And instead, what did he put in? Well, he has Nido, Shifcho, Iveres Kechavim, and Zoyna, a prostitute. And who does this affect particularly? The prostitute affects a Kohen. Im Kohenu. Im Kohenu, Yesh Kad Mishum Lav, the Zoyna. The Kohen is prohibited from marrying different types of women who is not allowed to marry, right? One of them, Isha Zoyna. Okay? Woman who is a prostitute, who is immoral, a Kohen is prohibited from marrying an immoral woman, even if she's Jewish, okay? The law of Bamash, it says. The prohibition is really like a gezeira. They have this ruling, Mishum Zoyna Yisrael's Geneva law, so long. Because he wants to make sure that not even a Jewish woman who is immoral will be married to a Kohen. Okay? You know, I'm running out of steam at this point, so I think that we'll call it.